welcome to the edition of the Chester and Flintshire Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday the 10th of April. Sunrise on Friday the 10th will be at 6:21 and sunset at 8 o'clock precisely. The good news is that the days are getting longer by approximately 4 minutes each day. So on the 10th, we'll have 13 hours, 39 minutes and 30 seconds of sunshine. By the time we get to the 17th, the sun will be rising at 6:04, setting at 8:15, and at that point we'll have 14 hours, 8 minutes and 30 seconds of daylight. So it's always nice to know that summer is proceeding. I spotted an article today when I was looking at things that happened on this day in history, and it actually quite interested me because on the 10th of April, 1633, people gathered outside a Holborn shop window in central London to stare at something none of them had ever seen before, a cluster of strange curved fruits, green but yellowing gently in the English light. These were bananas, and for most Londoners, they were utterly bewildering. The window display belonged to Thomas Johnson, a well-regarded botanist and apothecary, who apparently had a flair for spectacle. On the 10th of April, he exhibited the fruit in his shop, effectively staging Britain's banana debut. Crowds gathered, not to buy, few could have afforded the fruits or known how to eat them, but simply to gawk. In an age when colonisation and global trade were just beginning to reshape English diets, the banana was nothing short of a true marvel. Those early bananas were nothing like the sweet variety that most of us eat today. In fact, they weren't developed until the 1800s. Johnson's bananas were starchy plantains, probably meant to be cooked rather than eaten fresh, and it seems that the man himself wasn't particularly fond of them. He edited John Gerard's popular botanical encyclopedia, The Herbal, and he's thought to have expanded the banana's description, saying, "The fruit hereof yieldeth but little nourishment, and hurteth the stomach, if too much of it be eaten." In 1830, Joseph Paxton, a gardener at Chatsworth House, cultivated a banana plant from Mauritius. The plant was named Musa Cavendishii after William Cavendish, the 6th Duke of Devonshire. Almost all of the bananas we eat in the UK today are descended from that one plant developed at Chatsworth House. By the late 1800s, regular imports began, specifically from the Canary Islands. But banana imports were banned in 1940 because ships were needed for the war effort, making them a missing luxury for 5 years. And apparently there were plaintive wartime songs memorialising the banana, including a dancehall favourite, "When Can I Have a Banana Again?" and another one, "I've Never Seen a Straight Banana." And that made me think of something that my nanny told me many, many years ago, that during the war, when my dad was a little boy, she took him to see wax bananas in a shop window, because he'd never seen one and he didn't know what they were. The first post-war shipment arrived in 1945, and for many years they were really reserved for children. Today, the banana is consistently one of the biggest sellers in British supermarkets. Industry publication The Grocer has it third in terms of revenue, after strawberries and grapes, raking in a whopping £573 million in 2023. That's something to think about the next time you might be tempted to unzip a banana, as that very popular TV advertisement in the 1960s suggested that we should all do. Well, it's time now for me to stop wittering on and for our readers to bring you items of local news and also some magazine items from further afield. We do hope that you enjoy. Flintshire Connects Centres are operating reduced hours this month after Flintshire County Council said it is dealing with significant staff shortages. The council announced the changes online, saying some centres across the county would be closed on certain days throughout April. Flintshire Connects centres provide face-to-face access to a range of council services for people who find it difficult to use online or telephone options. Services available at the centres include adult social services, benefits advice, blue badge applications, council tax, housing, and payments for council services by card, cash or cheque. The five centres are in Buckley, Connors Quay, Flint, Holywell and Mould. Each centre is now opening on selected days only, rather than 5 days a week. The Buckley Connects, based at Buckley Library in the precinct, will open on Tuesdays and Thursdays in April. Connors Quay Connects at Wepper Drive will open on Mondays, Wednesdays, Thursdays and Fridays. Flint Connects on Church Street will open on Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Fridays. Holywell Connects at the Old Town Hall on High Street will open on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays. Mould Connects at Mould Library on Earl Road will open on Mondays and Wednesdays only. All centres open at 9 a.m. and close at 4:30 p.m. on operating days. Flintshire County Council has apologised for any inconvenience. The full schedule is available on the Council's website.
Hello once again, this is Michael Jones with the news from Chester and Flintshire. A joint road safety operation involving three police forces launched ahead of the Easter weekend to help keep motorcyclists and all road users safe. Officers from Cheshire, West Mercia and Staffordshire Police commenced Operation Caesar on Thursday, April the 2nd. A coordinated day of action targeting motorcycle safety. Working alongside bike safe volunteers and fire bike teams, officers were stationed at Midway truck stop, engaging with attending riders and members of the public. At the same time, enforcement activity was carried out on surrounding routes, with officers targeting those riding dangerously or at excessive speed. The operation continued across the Easter bank holiday weekend, with increased patrols in key hotspot areas where higher numbers of motorcyclists were expected as the motorcycle season gets into full swing. The teams issuing reports for offences including 29 drivers found having driven at excess speed, 19 vehicles found with non-conforming registration plates, 5 being found driving without due care and attention, 5 drivers found using mobile phones, 2 driving with no insurance or driving licences. Officers also stopped 12 drivers and issued fines for construction and use vehicle offences, which relate to the poor standards of brakes, tyres and vehicle equipment. Sergeant Andy Griffiths from Cheshire Constabulary's Bike Unit said Operation Caesar is about striking the right balance between engagement and enforcement. We want motorcyclists to enjoy the roads across Cheshire and beyond, but that enjoyment must not come at the expense of safety. By working together with our neighbouring forces, we're able to take a joined-up approach to tackling dangerous riding across the wider road network. Most riders we speak to welcome the advice and support we provide. For those who choose to ignore the law, we will take action. Our message is simple: ride within your limits, ride responsibly, and make sure you get home safely.
A drug driver who appeared confused when spoken to by police turned out to be over the limit for two substances, a court heard. Nathan Davis of Albert Street in Leeswood appeared at Mould Magistrates Court on Thursday. The 32-year-old admitted two offences of drug driving, which took place at Mould on January the 30th this year. Prosecutor Rian Jackson told the court that on the day in question, police received information from a member of the public who led them to speak to Davis, who had been driving a Nissan motor vehicle on the A541. He appeared confused and was slurring his words, and when police checked the vehicle's details, they found it was registered to somebody else. Davis tested negative for alcohol, but positive for drugs following his arrest. Evidential samples of blood revealed he had 160 micrograms of ketamine per litre of blood, with the limit being 20, and 202 micrograms of a cocaine derivative per litre of blood, with the limit being 50. Ms. Jackson added that Davis was sentenced in February for other aspects of the above incident, including driving whilst disqualified, for which he received a community order. District Judge Gwyn Jones expressed his disappointment that the matters had come to court in two separate sets of hearings, which he described as unfair for the defendant and messy for the purposes of sentencing. Having heard from the probation service that his client had already begun appointments and his unpaid work requirement, defending solicitor Andy Holliday made very few representations other than to invite the court to revoke the initial community order and re-sentence Davis to a new one to incorporate all offences. The judge agreed and made a fresh community order for 12 months with 10 rehabilitation activity days, 130 hours of unpaid work, and a 40-month driving ban.
Hello, this is Carol speaking. Experts from Chester Zoo are leading an international effort to return one of Africa's rarest antelopes to Kenya, with four zoo-bred males set to be translocated in the coming weeks. The animals, bred in European conservation zoos, will be moved to Mount Kenya Wildlife Conservancy to support breeding and long-term rewilding plans. Fewer than 50 mountain bongo are thought to remain in the wild. The species has declined sharply due to habitat loss and poaching. Conservationists say the introduction of new males with strong genetics will help strengthen the population and support recovery efforts. The programme has been coordinated over more than a decade by Chester Zoo, alongside partners including the Kenya Wildlife Service and the European Associations of Zoos and Aquaria. Dr. Nick Davis said, "The mountain bongo is one of Africa's rarest mammals and precariously close to extinction. Thankfully, though, the species is thriving in conservation zoos across Europe, with a number of important births in recent years helping to build a healthy, genetically strong population. As a result, we have carefully selected four males to provide a vital lifeline and help boost numbers at the Mount Kenya Wildlife Conservancy. Collaborations like this are absolutely essential if we are to prevent this magnificent species disappearing altogether. They demonstrate how modern science-led zoos play an important role in bringing species back from the brink, and the future of the mountain bongo may now be much brighter because of it. Technology is also being used to support conservation efforts. In 2024, Chester Zoo partnered with Kenya Wildlife Service and researchers from Liverpool John Moores University to develop an A1-powered detection system to monitor the animals in the wild. Stuart Nixon, Senior Manager for Africa at the zoo, said, "Our newly developed A1-powered cameras are also revolutionising how the species is monitored in the wild, helping us protect them more closely than ever before. Combined with reintroduction efforts like this one, this work will change the tide for mountain bongos."
Man who attacks two ASDA staff members after drinking wine and shadowboxing in the store has been spared jail. Robert Salisbury of Church Street in Connors Quay appeared at Mold Magistrates Court on Thursday for sentence. The 39-year-old had previously admitted two offences of assault by beating and one of assaulting a police constable. At Thursday's hearing, he admitted a further offence of criminal damage relating to a North Wales police vehicle cell. Rhian Jackson, prosecuting, told the court that the first set of offences happened on August the 13th last year at Asda in Queen's Ferry. Store manager Owen Shergold was alerted to a male and female who had entered the premises, as the male was seen drinking from a wine bottle that staff didn't see him come in with. Mr. Shergold challenged the defendant and asked if the wine bottle had been taken from store stock, and Salisbury became verbally abusive. He then began shadow boxing before striking Mr. Shergold into the face. Liam Scher, the store's security officer, engaged with the defendant a short time later when he tried to re-enter the shop. Salisbury threw a punch which connected with Mr. Scher's mouth. Police officers arrived and arrested the defendant. Andy Holliday, defending, told the court it's clear Mr. Salisbury, who committed the offences, was a very different character to the one you see before you today. The man you hear about in the prosecution case was obviously intoxicated and engaged in aggressive behaviour, unfortunately assaulting members of staff and the officer. District Judge Gwyn Jones told the defendant, all of those people working in stores provide a valuable service to the community, very often on low wages. They don't go to work to be abused and assaulted. The judge imposed an overall custodial term of 18 weeks, but suspended it for 24 months. Salisbury must undertake 15 rehabilitation activity days, 26 sessions on an accredited program, and a six-month drug rehabilitation requirement. He must also pay £150 in compensation to each of the three people he assaulted, as well as £134 compensation to North Wales Police for the damage and £150 prosecution costs.
The baby of one of the world's smallest antelope species has taken her first wobbly steps at Chester Zoo, standing barely taller than a tin of baked beans. The tiny Kirk's Dick Dick fawn, named Dotty, was born weighing just a few hundred grams. When fully grown, she'll reach just 40 centimetres tall, making her one of the smallest antelopes on the planet. In a heartwarming twist, Dotty is being raised with the help of a surrogate father. Her biological father passed away of old age shortly before her birth, but a new male Dick Dick, named Dan, who arrived from a zoo in Cumbria in February, has gently stepped into the role alongside mum Chrissy. Megan Carpenter, assistant team manager of small mammals at Chester Zoo, said, "Dick Dicks are naturally very shy animals, so for the first couple of weeks, Chrissy's tiny fawn has been tucked away in a quiet, cosy den, with mum popping back to feed her and check on her. Now, though, she's beginning to find her feet. And we've seen those lovely first steps as she heads out on her first little outdoor adventures." In a lovely addition to the story, we also welcomed a new male Dick Dick, Dan, as part of the European Conservation Breeding Programme. The species is often found in the scrublands and mountain regions of Kenya, Tanzania and Namibia in Africa, where they take their name from the sharp, high-pitched dik-dik alarm call they make when they're startled as they dart for cover. They use their elongated, flexible noses to pluck leaves directly from branches, a unique feature found only in dik-diks, and they mark their territory using scent glands beneath their eyes and between their toes.
A well-known artisan market in Mostyn is returning later this month, bringing local traders, makers and food stalls back for the 2026 season. The Abercan Artisan Market, which begins on Saturday the 25th of April and will run on the last Saturday of each month until September. The only change comes in August, when the market will take place a week earlier on August the 22nd. The market is held at Abercan Fabrics Hobby and Home and has been a regular draw for people looking to shop local and pick up something a bit different. Visitors can expect a mix of stalls selling handmade crafts, gifts and artwork, alongside a range of food traders offering freshly prepared produce. It's a chance to meet the people behind the products and support small businesses from across the region. Entry is free, making it an easy option for a day out, whether people are coming with family, meeting friends, or just browsing. Organisers say the aim is to give independent traders a platform while creating a relaxed, welcoming space for the community. The market has built up a following over recent years, with many visitors returning each month to see what's new on the stalls. Traders are also being encouraged to sign up for the 2026 events. With pitches available across the season, it offers an opportunity for local businesses to reach new customers and be part of a popular event. With its mix of shopping, food and local talent, the market is expected to once again attract steady crowds throughout the summer.
Hi there, this is Pauline. There was a very special celebration at a care home in Chester on Wednesday, April the 1st, as Mae Dunn celebrated her 109th birthday. Family members and friends gathered at Florence Grogan House in Blaken to wish her a happy birthday. Mae, who was born in Westport, Ireland in 1917, has made headlines and even a radio appearance on County Mayo-based station Midwest Radio in recent days. She moved to Leeds shortly after the Second World War. From there, she moved to Chester, where she had five children, John, Michael, Maureen, Patrick and Peter. Peter, her youngest son, said that it was a pleasure to still be able to celebrate with her. He said, to reach 100 was like wow, and to be here at 109 is a bit surreal. People ask, what's the secret? Is it a healthy diet? But she's always been quite a picky eater, he laughs. She never drank much and she never smoked. But there's plenty of teetotalers that haven't reached this age. Up until a few years ago, Mae was still living at the family home in Lincoln Road, Blaken. Her room at the care home is adorned with items marking her recent milestone birthdays, including a certificate from the Mayo County Council for her 108th birthday, stating she is the current oldest living Mayo person. She also has a plaque from Pope Francis from her 106th birthday and has received letters from Queen Elizabeth and King Charles, including one which arrived on Wednesday. Asked about the day's celebrations, Mae said it was lovely to see friends and family. She added, I didn't expect this at all. I'm enjoying it. It is nice, isn't it? Other family members, including her sons, John and Patrick, joked that one of the reasons for her long life might be down to very regular cups of tea.
A pharmacy in Mold is planning a major upgrade and move to a new location. Hughes Pharmacy, which has served the Mold community for more than 50 years, will relocate and expand into a modern two-storey facility in the town centre. The ground floor will house the pharmacy, while a new healthcare centre will occupy the first floor. Edward Biggs and Luke Duddill, the owners of Hughes Pharmacy since 2019, said, "This investment allows us to redefine what a pharmacy offers by modernising services and then adapting to the way the NHS is changing, with community pharmacy playing a much bigger clinical role. By expanding into a larger premises and creating a healthcare centre, we will be able to reduce waiting times, improve access to services, and support both Mould and the wider surrounding area. The upgraded facility will include consultation and treatment rooms, improved patient flow and expanded NHS and private healthcare services. The first floor healthcare centre will offer a modern environment for both patients and healthcare professionals, with multiple consultation rooms, a waiting area and staff support spaces, designed to attract a range of healthcare providers. The centre aims to support physiotherapy, podiatry, counselling, private clinics and other specialist services. Prescriptions will continue to be dispensed in Mould, ensuring that patients receive face-to-face care and that services remain anchored in the community. The pharmacy will move from inside the Daniel Owen precinct to the former North Clwyd Animal Rescue Shop. Renovation work is set to begin soon, with the aim of opening the new pharmacy and healthcare centre in September 2026.
A Chester primary school has received a mixed report following its most recent Ofsted inspection. Upton Westleigh Primary School in Weston Grove was inspected on January the 27th this year, with the report released mid-March. With safeguarding met, the school was also considered to be up to standard in three areas: attendance and behaviour and inclusion, as well as personal development and well-being. However, the report stated that four areas, achievement, curriculum and teaching, early years and leadership, all required attention. The report said, "Behaviour across the school is calm and orderly. Leaders set clear expectations and routines. Staff apply these consistently. The environment is respectful. In lessons, attitudes to learning are positive. Any disruption is addressed quickly." It continued, "Leaders have built a supportive environment in which pupils feel included. Leaders reduce pupils' barriers to learning and well-being. This is through close work with families, timely checks and reasonable adjustments. Pupils say that the school listens and helps them to feel safe and included. Leaders check how well disadvantaged pupils are learning." There was praise too for personal development and well-being, including speaking to and treating each other with care and understanding of healthy relationships. However, the report added, "Pupils do not achieve as well as they should in writing. This is because there are weaknesses in the teaching of handwriting and spelling. In contrast, outcomes in national assessments in reading, mathematics and phonics are in line with national averages." Ofsted inspectors also highlighted weaknesses in the writing curriculum at the school, with pupils not being given enough opportunity to practice this skill. However, there was praise for reading and mathematics teaching. The report added, "Leaders do not have secure oversight of the curriculum across all subjects. They do not check the quality of teaching closely enough. However, some aspects of leadership receive praise, as well as governors." The full report is available online at Ofsted.
Hello, this is Chris speaking. A North Wales farmer who experienced a horrifying dog attack that killed more than 20 sheep has spoken out about a newly imposed livestock worrying law. The Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs announced on March the 18th that a new land law on that date comes into effect that would see farm animals in England and Wales get stronger protection from dog attacks. The aim of the new law is to prevent livestock death and injury, which will save farmers thousands of pounds each year. The maximum fine has increased from £1,000 to an unlimited fine. The police will now have greater powers and can investigate incidents more efficiently. These powers include entering premises to secure evidence or animal DNA. Alongside this, courts will also be able to require offenders to cover the costs of seizing and caring for a detained dog. One farmer who knows the pain and trauma a dog attack can bring is Paul Jones of Rose Farm in Wrexham. In March 2023, two American XL Bulldogs escaped from their home and went onto his farm, where they carried out a horrendous attack, killing 22 of his pregnant sheep and injuring a further 48. Speaking about the new law, 53-year-old Mr. Jones said, "I welcome the laws wholeheartedly," he explained, "but my concern is that, let's say you have someone, a defendant, who is on benefits. They will say they no longer have no money. Is the court really going to then fine them?" Mr. Jones said the financial impact of the incident in 2023 amounted to more than £14,000. Asked what message he'd give to dog owners and walkers, he added, "I'm turning the ewes out to lamb next week. If you see sheep in the field, just stay away. There are plenty of other places to walk over the lambing period. Even walking among the sheep while they're lambing can cause a lot of damage, which you don't realise." A programme to introduce 20-mile-an-hour speed limits outside schools across the borough is nearing completion. The changes follow a comprehensive assessment of roads surrounding school entrances. Based on this work, speed limit reductions were recommended for 16 schools to help improve safety for children, parents and carers travelling to and from school. Two of the first schools to benefit from the new measures were Whitegate Church of England Primary School and Abbeygate College in Seyton. Craig Jenkinson, head teacher of Abbeygate College, said, "Our entire Abbeygate College community is sincerely grateful to the council for their support in reducing drivers' speed limits to 20 miles per hour past our school. Caring for the safety of all children must be a top priority in our society. The 20-mile-an-hour extension beyond Seyton Primary, now including our senior school, is intended to promote considerate, patient and cautious driving from us all." Caroline McKenzie, head teacher at Whitegate Church of England Primary School, said, "We are delighted that the 20-mile-an-hour limit is now in place. It's been great to work with the council on several initiatives to reduce danger within our village. Once again, this highlights that the safety of our children is of paramount importance." Councillor Karen Shaw, Deputy Leader of the Council and Cabinet Member for Transport and Highways, said, "Creating safe, welcoming streets around our schools is one of the most important things we can do for our children. After careful reviewing every school road with speed limits above 20 miles per hour, we identified where lower limits and additional safety measures could make a real difference to the lives of our young people. Slower speeds don't just reduce the risk and severity of collisions, they help create the kind of environment where children can move with confidence, free from unnecessary danger. Their safety must always come first."
More than 6,000 visitors enjoyed the Cheshire and North Wales Food and Drink Festival, despite organisers being forced to close for a full day. The three-day event held over the Easter weekend was hit by disruption from Storm Dave, meaning Saturday's programme had to be cancelled on safety grounds. However, organisers say a strong turnout on Friday and a standout Sunday helped salvage the weekend. The event is now under the stewardship of a local hotelier and Diva Fest co-owner Stephen Esketh and Cool Breeze Events founder Katie Isaacson. The pair stepped in earlier this year to secure the future of the festival, ensuring the continuation of one of the region's most popular annual events. Mr. Hesketh, who also runs Chester's Townhouse Hotel, said closing on Saturday was a huge blow, but safety had to come first. What really stood out was how everyone responded, traders, performers and visitors. "To still welcome over 6,000 people is a fantastic result. Sunday had a brilliant atmosphere. A major boost came via Cherish Findon judge on Bake Off The Professionals, whose appearance was rescheduled from Saturday to Sunday. She went on to attract the largest chef demo audience of the event. The Taylor Swift tribute act, originally planned for Saturday, was also successfully moved, helping maintain the program. The festival also showcased regional producers and hospitality businesses, including headline sponsor Chance Clean Cider, UK's first dedicated non-alcoholic cider brand, at a time when the sector continues to face mounting pressures. Despite the strong attendance, organisers confirmed the loss of a full trading day will result in a financial hit. Looking ahead, the festival team says it will now review the event's future. Mr. Hesketh added, "We believe this can become a major celebration of food and drink and hospitality across Cheshire and North Wales. But events like this need support. When they're gone, they rarely come back, and the economic and community value goes with them."
A Chester family whose two daughters are treated for permanent hearing loss at the Countess are delighted to see childhood deafness featured in a new Peppa Pig storyline. The new storyline, created with the National Deaf Children's Society, introduces hearing loss to millions of young viewers as Peppa's younger brother, George, learns to navigate life with a hearing aid. Mum, Lucy Cementa, who has been visiting the Countess of Chester Hospital's audiology department regularly since her girls were babies, has welcomed the visibility and praised the Trust's audiology team for their support. She said, "We're here every few months. The team have been with us since the girls were such an early age, and they are so patient and responsive. Technology has really improved over the years. These days, hearing aids are subtle, waterproof, and stay in perfectly, even in the rain. The girls can do everything their friends do whilst wearing them. We see them as like wearing glasses just for ears." Lucy says it's important for children to feel noticed when TV shows feature characters like them, and is glad that there has been more visibility in the media in recent years. Like George, Lucy's daughters, now aged 4 and 7, were diagnosed at a young age and have grown up learning to use hearing aids as part of their daily lives. Jane Bevan, head of audiology, said, "Anything that highlights the importance of hearing for children is invaluable. Around 1 in 1,000 babies are born with permanent hearing loss, and early checks are essential. The sooner we can put support in place, the better it is for the child's long-term outcomes. We are delighted about the Peppa Pig storyline, as it's really important for children who wear hearing aids to see themselves in the media. If it helps even one child, it's made a huge difference."
A North Wales police detection dog has retired after 7 years working alongside officers to find drugs, cash and firearms. Police dog Bryn served as a specialist drugs, cash and firearms detection dog throughout his career with the force. North Wales Police announced his retirement and said he would be supported in his new life by Paws Off Duty, a charity that assists retired police dogs. North Wales Police said, "With a heavy heart, we wish Bryn a very happy and well-earned retirement. For the past 7 years, Bryn has faithfully served our community as a drugs, cash and firearms detection dog. Enjoy your retirement, Bryn. You've earned it." Specialist detection dogs like Bryn are distinct from the general purpose dogs that make up much of the force's dog section. While general purpose dogs, typically German Shepherds, Dutch Herders or Malinois, are trained across a range of tasks, including tracking suspects, searching for missing persons and protecting officers, specialist detection dogs are trained to identify specific targets. Detection work covering drugs, cash and firearms require a different type of training, and often a different breed, with Labradors, Cocker Spaniels and Springer Spaniels commonly used. North Wales Police operates as part of the North Wales and Cheshire Police Dog Alliance, with handlers typically working alongside both a general purpose dog and a specialist animal. Pause Off Duty is a charity that supports retired police, military and emergency service dogs in finding homes and ongoing care after active service. Finland tops happy poll again. Wealth, long life and strong friendships. These are just a few of the things that make Finland the happiest country on earth. The snowy Scandinavian country, home to 5.6 million people, has topped the annual World Happiness Report for the 9th year in a row. I do not think there is a magic potion, but it helps to have a society which strives towards freedom, equality and justice, said Finnish President Alexander Stubb. The report, produced by the University of Oxford's Wellbeing Research Centre, asked 100,000 people from over 140 countries how fulfilled they feel in their lives. Following Finland, in the top five come Iceland, Denmark, Costa Rica and Sweden. Last year, the UK was ranked a respectable 23rd, but this year slipped six places to 29th. In most countries, young people are happier than they were 20 years ago. However, in the UK, US, Canada, Australia and New Zealand, under 25s have become less happy. Social media plays a part. This year's report reveals that those who use social media for less than an hour per day tend to report higher levels of happiness than those who don't use it at all. On the flip side, the report suggests that more time people spend on social media, the less happy they become. Heavy use of social media, that's more than 5 hours a day, is linked with a lower sense of well-being, especially for girls and young people in English-speaking countries.
Hello once again, this is Michael Jones. We're through to the better weather. Now here are some of my own poems for springtime. Sunshine in the morning. Sure enough, this month is made of different stuff. There's a glimmer in the eye now that the world has turned to face the sun and receive that brighter light that drives the winter away. Smile from the florist who works across the way, whose colourful language plants lipstick on the day. And every man springs into life, heads are raised in a verdant landscape, seen through the haze. And all the colours shone in the flowers of the hedgerow, the offspring of the season, a new beginning. Suddenly the land is full of sights and sounds, the streets are full of children's voices. And we're listening to the dawn as the town comes to life and the milk float arrives, bringing sunshine in the morning. Pause for thought. A jaded landscape emerges tarnished in the disappearing ice and the gutters flow south. The new season walks in through the door with a flowery persona and green eyes, struggling to be heard, the words rushing from his mouth. Now that the sun has returned, a new kind of fire comes round to shine in on the home, and people are suddenly more outgoing, their hopes like scarves wrapped around them. The cars splash through the rainy streets. The urban melodrama dances all around them, illuminated by the headlamps from here to next week. The thaw sets in, the water drops. The people light the lanterns and the windows fill with signs of life. And a dreamer in the city park quietly stops to pause for thought and casts his weary glance upwards into the vault until his heart fills with blue skies and sunlight. And finally, come back to life. Watch society come back to life and all of greenery on the rise, a striving for a bright blue sky. And down by the shore, houses and homes by the score, see the people draw the blinds and rub their eyes. Stepping out of the old front door, hearing the children rushing down the stairs. Love the garden, feel the sunshine on your face, pretty flowers everywhere. Lavender dreams all through the musical months, happier times arrive with the sun. Suddenly there is colour and life, and the returning waters ease my mind. Come back to life with the sun's rays, a light rain falling on better times. Bring me to that brighter day.
art that you can touch. On the 17th of March, the San Severo Chapel Museum in Naples invited people who are blind or visually impaired to a special event where guests were able to touch artworks and sculptures. They were helped around the museum by hosts and had to wear special latex gloves to protect the art. One of the sculptures they could touch was the Veiled Christ, and this figure of Jesus and the veil are both carved from the same block of marble, so it's regarded as one of the most technically impressive sculptures in the world.
A man from Prestatyn drove in excess of 90 miles an hour in Anglesey, or more than 8 times in excess of the legal limit for ketamine. Oliver Jones then later drove at speeds greater than 60 miles an hour in Prestatyn, where the limit was 20 miles an hour. Jones, 26, of Granant Road, was jailed for 2 years and 2 months at Mold Crown Court on Friday, March the 20th. He had previously admitted 2 counts of drug driving and 1 charge each of driving dangerously, driving while disqualified and uninsured, and failing to stop. Prosecutor Carl Schultz said on 25th of July 2025, a police officer saw Jones' Volkswagen vehicle travelling on the A55 in Llangefni in excess of 90 miles an hour. The officer followed it before causing it to stop at the next lay-by. While speaking to Jones, the officer said he appeared drowsy and lethargic, with his speech slow and slightly slurred and his pupils pinpointed. When asked by the officer if he'd consumed cannabis, Jones said he smokes it at night for pain management. He was arrested after giving a positive roadside test for cannabis. Then at a police station, Jones gave a blood sample which tested positive. These offences placed him in breach of a suspended sentence he received last May for drugs-related matters. Jones admitted the drug driving charges before magistrates on January the 26th and was handed an interim disqualification. But on February the 4th, officers in Prestatyn noted Jones' vehicle travelling towards them, seemingly travelling in excess of the 20 miles an hour limit. The car had its fog lights on, although the weather was clear, while Jones sped up after officers turned their car around and followed him. He went on to drive in excess of 60 miles an hour on 20 mph roads in Prestatyn and caused anxiety to a learner driver when overtaking them. The car was located in Place Avenue, Prestatyn, and he was then arrested at his partner's home in Melillin. Representing Jones, who had 2 previous convictions for 5 offences, John Wynne Williams asked the court to acknowledge his guilty pleas. Sentencing, Judge Timothy Petz also imposed a driving ban of 3 months and 1 month on Jones. He must then pass an extended retest before being allowed back on the road.
Is this the world's slowest postcard? A postcard has taken 27 years to get to the right address. In 1988, a British man named Carl Bushby decided to walk the 36,000 miles from Chile in South America to his hometown of Hull. On the way, in 1999, he was given £75 by someone to deliver a card to a friend in Austria, which he had just done. Now Carl is almost home. He hopes to cross the English Channel by walking through the Channel Tunnel and be back in Hull by October.
Hello once again, this is Michael Jones with the news from North Wales. The public are being asked to help shape the future of Gwydir South Forest. Natural Resources Wales has opened a consultation on its draft forest resource plan for Gwydir South Forest and is inviting feedback from anyone with an interest in the area's long-term management. Mike Indica, Senior Officer for Forest Operations, said reviewing the forest resource plan for Gwydir South is an important part of our ongoing work, and we want to ensure that the public have the opportunity to look at the draft proposals and share their thoughts with us directly. We welcome all feedback and questions. The draft plans are available to view online through NRW's consultation hub and include the location map, a summary of objectives, the long-term vision map, the forest management and felling strategy, and information on forest types and restocking. Because of the volume of material, the documents are available online only. To support public engagement, NRW hosted drop-in sessions where people were able to meet with officers, ask questions, and talk through the draft proposals. Photos have been shared of the Northern Lights, Aurora Borealis, being spotted in the Denbighshire sky earlier this weekend. Ruth Davis shared the photos with the Free Press, which she took on a hillside above Ruthin, overlooking the Vale of Clwyd at 12:45 a.m. on Saturday, March the 21st. The Northern Lights are caused when atoms in the Earth's upper atmosphere combine with charged particles from the sun, creating the vibrant display. They're more frequently seen at higher latitudes in places like Alaska, Canada, and Antarctica, which are closer to the Earth's poles. This particular aurora was the result of a strong geomagnetic storm caused by a coronal mass ejection. Ruth said it was freezing up on the farm, and I considered heading to the coast, but there was too much sea mist. So I decided to use the vintage David Brown tractor as my model for the night so that I could view the Northern Lights above the haze and mist 1,200 feet above sea level. The aurora was not the strongest I've seen, but my camera was able to pick up a lot more detail than I could with the naked eye. I set the timer on my camera so I could join the tractor for the shot, and finally got to bed at 4 a.m. as activity continued throughout the night. The Met Office issues the following tips to help you see the Northern Lights. Find a dark location with no light pollution and look towards the northern horizon. Police officer in Rhyl has taken matters into her own hands to help make female runners in the town feel safer. PC Catherine Hughes, pictured, is a passionate runner herself, understands firsthand the anxiety and vulnerability that women can experience while out on the roads and trails. Going above and beyond her traditional duties, she and her colleagues have joined Women Runners, addressing any instances of misogyny in the moment and speaking directly with individuals whose behaviour falls short of what is acceptable. I chose to start Operation Cadence because I recognise a lot of people, especially women, enjoy running and being active outdoors, but don't always feel safe doing so alone, Catherine said. As a police officer and someone who actively runs, I understand how important it is to feel safe when out running and being active. As part of the operation, we're going to be conducting patrols, including plainclothes runs in running hotspot areas, raising awareness of harassment and suspicious behaviour, and encouraging reporting of it so we, as police, can take action and tackle it. Through this initiative, Catherine hopes to not only make local streets feel safer for women, but to shift attitudes and send a powerful message to the wider community that everyone should be able to run without fear. She plans to display posters in identified running hotspots around Rhyl with a QR code, making reporting any instance a quick and easy process. Head of Local Policing Services Chief Superintendent Jackie Downs said, "By encouraging female runners to report their experiences, we're strengthening our ability to identify offenders, intervene early, and protect those at risk."
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, it's Tina here. Here's a new number puzzle for you. Each clue provides an answer, which is the starting point for the next clue. Are you ready? Begin with the number of trombones in the song that led to the big parade. Now, quarter that number. From this answer, subtract the date in March of St. Patrick's Day. Now, add the highest number on a bingo card. And finally, What is 50% of this? You have your final number now. Have you got that? If not, maybe you would enjoy another attempt, so track back over those five clues to try. Or maybe pause for a bit more thinking time. I will explain the answer and all those five steps next. We started with the number of trombones in the song that led to the big parade, which is 76. If you quarter that number, you get to 19. From this number, subtract the date in March of St. Patrick's Day, so 19 subtract 17 gives us 2. Adding then the highest number on a bingo card, to that 2 we get 90 added, and it's 92. And finally, what is 50% of this? Giving us our final answer of 46. Well done if you got that.
TNS Soundings. TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
And now Charlotte brings us up to date with news of her new role.
Hello, this is Charlotte from Guide Dogs, here with an update on my new role in the Buddy Dog service. Before I get started on my update, I should let you know that I've changed the names of the dogs in my updates for privacy reasons. I've had a busy few months getting up to speed with Buddy Dogs and how it all works. I've mostly been observing the other specialists while they place dogs and support families, but last week I placed my first dog with a family. The dog is Bobby, an 18-month-old golden retriever who was moved out of guide dog training due to inconsistent work and low motivation for guiding. Bobby is a lovely boy but did not have the concentration or resilience for the guiding role. Bobby lived with fosterers during his training who had two young sons. It was noted on his reports that he got on very well with them and was calm, gentle and affectionate, as well as having great social behaviour at home and on his lead walks. Each week the Buddy Dog team discuss all dogs that have been deemed unsuitable to continue in guide dog training, and it was unanimously agreed that Bobby would make a great buddy dog, so we accepted him onto the scheme. In the meantime, I had received an application from a family in my area who had two sons of a similar age to Bobby's fosterer's children. The younger son had sight loss, but often the benefits of a buddy are felt by the whole family. I immediately thought of Bobby while I was interviewing this family. There are quite a lot of steps to the application process for families wanting a buddy dog. There are two online webinars hosted by members of the team, one at the start of the process to inform the applicants about the service, and one further on about dog behaviour and body language, how to care for your dog and responsibilities and obligations. Much like a guide dog, buddy dogs have specific criteria and welfare guidelines that must be followed, like not leaving a dog for more than 4 hours in a 24-hour period, and keeping the dog up to date with flea and worming treatments and vaccinations. During the application process, we interview all families and perform a home check to ensure there is adequate room for a dog, that the environment is safe and that the garden is secure. Once we are satisfied that the families are suitable candidates for a buddy dog, we invite them to an experience session, usually held at one of our training centres. Here the family will get a chance to meet a dog and staff will observe how the family interact. We will discuss appropriate dog interactions with the children and will check that the children understand these. It's also a good opportunity to discuss the temperament, breed and colour of the dog that would be most suitable. Like guide dogs, we don't tend to allow families to select preferences without reason, but we will do our best to accommodate them. This family had mentioned in their application that they would like an affectionate, longer-haired dog because their younger son was very tactile and feeling soft things calmed him down. As I felt that Bobby might be a good fit for this family, I decided to use him as the dog that they would meet on their experience session. This is something that we do sometimes when we have a dog ready to be matched, but often we need to use dogs that are still in guide dog training or borrow back dogs that are already qualified buddies for these sessions. Luckily, the family thought that Bobby was wonderful and he interacted brilliantly with the boys. They were very respectful of Bobby and understanding when he'd had enough of playing. After the session, I discussed with the team and we all decided that it was a good match. The family were delighted that Bobby was going to be their dog and said that their sons had not stopped talking about Bobby since the session. I placed Bobby with the family last week. When I arrived, I saw that they had made a welcome home Bobby sign. Bobby marched in like he had always been there and was keen to get stuck into all the new toys that they had bought him. I went over all the information needed one last time, helped Bobby get settled in and then left them to it. The next day I called to check in on how the first night had been and all had gone well. The parents said they had already seen positive changes for their son. They are now in the month trial period and if there are no problems, Bobby will qualify as their buddy dog in 3 weeks' time. They will have support from guide dogs for the duration of Bobby's life. As a guide dog trainer, I often felt quite removed from the process as I would hand over dogs for their advanced training and would not see them again. However, in this role, supporting families through the whole process is incredibly rewarding, and it is great to see how the dogs can have such a positive effect, not only on the child with sight loss, but for the whole family. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back with another update soon.
DNF Soundings. DNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, my name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm. And naturally enough, I called them Cabin Conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin Conversations about World Password Day. The definition of password can mean either a secret word to gain admission to a place or a string of characters keyed into an electronic device like a computer to access a network. World Password Day relates to the latter and falls on the first Thursday of May, this year the 7th of May. This day came about in a less than efficient way, considering it related to logical security steps in a digital age. Security researcher Mark Burnett had started the idea with a book called Perfect Passwords, suggesting in 2005 that everyone should have their own password days, whereby they update and change their current ones. Later, the American multinational technology corporation Intel, known for their central processing microchip units for over 50 years, took up the mantle and created a worldwide observance in 2013. Their aim to communicate and educate people about creating strong passwords and the importance of regularly updating them to remain information secure online. In fact, it was the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, in 1961, which established computer password coding, allowing multiple people to use a shared computer system. Yet by 1978, a study published that guessing passwords through knowing certain personal information, like a pet's name, was easier than deciphering the authentication codes. Since 2020, there has been many electronic data breaches, prompting another worldwide survey, citing the top two electronic passwords commonly used and taking less than 1 second to crack by criminals were the number sequence 123456, used by 3.5 million, and the actual noun password, used by 1.7 million people. Talking of fail-safe codes, It was during World War II that huge breakthroughs in both transmitting and decoding secret messages took place. Various nations turned to their indigenous languages for communicating through enemy-occupied territory. The United States military employed 400 to 500 Native American code talkers to operate radios transmitting highly sensitive tactical information between officers and frontline posts, mostly in languages of Navajo, Comanche, and Hopi. It proved successful because the enemy troops could not decipher either their tribal alphabet letters and numbers, nor the made-up terminology systems. For example, in Navajo, there is no word for submarine, so they dubbed them iron fish. The British Army too had a bash at using the native Welsh language, though not to any great extent, and soon found it cumbersome to continue. During the same war, though only civilians, the Channel Islanders switched from their usual English and French to draw on their native Je'e language when informing each other of invaders' activities and passing vital information to British forces while under enemy occupation. Bletchley Park, Milton Keynes, Buckinghamshire, also became a place of surprising ingenuity in 1939. People from all occupations in Britain were recruited for their intelligence and linguistic abilities. They began with just 200 staff, then by 1944, a significant jump to 9,000, all joining the British government Station X, Code and Cipher School. To help the war effort, they deciphered enemy transmissions, proving an advantage to the British military, either by preempting battles or interfering with enemy communicated plans. This work, headed by Alan Turing, British mathematician, computer scientist, logician, and cryptanalyst, paved the way for building the first domestic computer, an essential in modern-day life. As a point of interest, Bletchley Park is now a museum open daily, offering audio description electronically for two exhibitions: multimedia, large print, tactile and braille guides, and is guide dog friendly. Of course, those with visual impairment do face unique challenges utilising electronic technology, because of creating, entering, and managing passwords. Codes, which are reliant on conventional systems providing visual prompts. Coping with these is done by combining assistive technologies, accessible software, and tactile methods along with secure strategies. Screen readers like JAWS, NVDA, and VoiceOver are converters of text to speech or braille. Although less than 1% of UK visually impaired people can read braille, so most will need headphones for privacy when listening to spoken text in public places. Password management tools such as 1Password or Bitwarden can be helpful, as some companies like Apple, with their iCloud keychain, build in unique password security systems. Increasingly popular for everyone are biometrics, which only require touchscreen devices to accept individuals' fingerprints or face recognition, unlocking networks. Though to add another layer of security for particularly sensitive information, besides passwords and PIN digits, are the two-factor authentication, 2FA services, which often link with a one-off code via phone text or email account entered after users' passwords. The Royal National Institute for the Blind People, RNIB, also have assistive technology for computers too. Whether speaking secret codes or entering digital passwords, Security is best served by keeping track of individual preferences and systems. May you secure some time to review and update key details.
DNF Soundings.
That is all that we have time for on this week's recording. We hope that you found some of the articles we've put together for you to be of interest, and we look forward to reading for you again next week. So on behalf of everyone who's recorded tonight, I would like to wish you well and say goodbye.